Dinky Dawson, and Tony Rain, and we're kicking off our podcast, Two Pints in a Corner. Hear it ringing, you got it?
Aye, it's ringing.
Hello?
Ted Thomas.
Hey,
Tony,
how are you?
Tony Rain, how are you?
Living the dream, I guess.
You are. It's been a million.
At least that's what they tell me.
It's been a million years.
I don't know. Let me just turn this thing in the background down.
Sure.
Good morning, Ted.
Hey, Dinky. How are you today?
I think we all could be a bit better. It's one of them weird nights.
Yeah, it's a weird morning.
Yeah.
We're good.
Indeed.
Right, ready for a quick...
Oh, that's good. We're all above ground anyway.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of it, isn't it? So we're up for a bit of lively conversation this morning with...
I can barely hear you, Tony.
Okay, we may have to... Dinky may need to mix me up a little more. Any better?
A little bit.
Okay, hold on.
Well, let me... let's just walk down and grab my hearing aids, and then the phone will go directly into them. The miracles of modern technology.
Right, no kidding.
Tell me about it. You all right, though?
Yeah.
Can that hear, you can hear us now?
I'm just popping him in now.
Yeah.
Oh, you're popping your headset.
His aids.
Oh, you've been in front of speakers too long, like me.
Yeah, once I get the hearing aids in, I can connect my phone to them, and then you guys will be pumped directly into my head.
Oh, my God.
Oh. Pretty soon we'll all have plates in our heads.
Yeah.
Little receivers behind our ears.
Start the app on my phone, and we should be good to go.
Should be good. Yeah.
Start this up.
It's a lot better, isn't it?
Let me turn you up.
That's a lot better.
Are you hearing that better?
Oh, that's a bit better, yeah.
Yeah, you hear me?
There you go.
You hear me okay, Ted?
Yep,
great.
You can hear? Okay.
Yeah, we've got you in well. It's
I
fine.
Can.
We've got a good mix going here.
Aye.
Everything good on this end?
Thanks for joining us, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for joining us. I didn't know Sandy was down here, though.
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Sandy been on the Cape all these years, Ted?
I'm sorry?
Has Sandy been down in Falmouth all these years?
I don't really get down that way at all anymore.
Okay. All right. Alrighty. So, welcome again to Two Pints in the Corner with Dinky Dawson, Tony Rain, and our special guest today, Ted Thomas.
Hi, Ted.
Hello.
Who was a channel resident for many years. We hope he's got some good stories for us.
Aye.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. How did you get involved at the channel, Ted?
Well, when I was in high school, I used to hear commercials on the TV, on the radio, usually for John Butcher.
Uh-huh.
And they would always say, he's playing the channel this weekend. And so, it was in the back of my head. This seemed like a good place to go. And on September 20th, 1983, I came into the club with a band called Hazel.
Uh-huh.
And I remember pulling into the parking lot and looking at the building. It was just that squat cinder block box, thinking, I thought it was going to be a lot bigger. But then I stepped inside and thought, wow, this place is huge.
Yeah, it was the scene.
And, it was sometime in the afternoon when we were loading in, and I got to talk with a couple of the bartenders and some of the bouncers, and everybody, it seemed like a really cool place, and the folks I had talked to were great. And I started thinking, boy, I'd like to come back here. And so whenever I wasn't working with a band, I'd come down to the club and hang out. And eventually, I struck up a friendship with JJ, and
oh, yeah.
Who was running security at the time, and he started saying, hey, why don't you come work for me? And I kept saying, no, I just like to come in and hang out. And eventually he started asking me, if I could just help out on a night that he was short-staffed or the crowd was bigger than expected. I said, sure, I don't mind. And, occasionally he kept coming back asking me if I'd come work for him, and I kept saying no. And this went on for about a year. And one afternoon I had come in and I was talking with Sandy, one of the bartenders, as she was setting up.
Aye.
And JJ walked by and he gave me the usual spiel about coming to work for him. I said no. And he walked away, and Sandy turned around. She walked up right in my face and she said, you hear all the time, why don't you get paid for it, you effing idiot? And it was like a switch got flipped, and I thought, you make a good point.
That's
so I grabbed
right.
JJ and I said, when do you want me to start? And he said, hang on. He ran out back and came back a few minutes later, dragged me over to the concession stand and threw two extra large staff shirts in my chest and said, be here tomorrow at 7, don't be late. And I was there the next night. For some reason, I was scared to death. I mean, I had been hanging out in the club for a year or so, and suddenly I had a staff shirt on, and I couldn't figure out how a kid from Stoneham out in the suburbs was suddenly in Boston in a nightclub.
That's great.
I started to get to know all the other people working there, and I was like, wow, this is great. And I quickly got very comfortable there. And
how long were you there?
I'm sorry?
How long were you at the club?
All told, I think I started as an official employee in 84. I was there until sometime in 87.
Okay.
I was there for a few years.
Yeah.
I think it was about my last year there. Left after JJ had left, we had a couple of people who took over his job running security.
Yeah, Mike Smith.
And I'm sorry?
Mike Smith, you remember Mike?
Yeah. He was the bar manager, wasn't he?
Well, he came in when I came in. I came in as a bar manager and he was security, and then he took over when I left.
Oh yeah, he was a bouncer for a while when I had started.
Right.
That's when I first met him and his brother Steve, who worked there.
Yeah, and Steve Bavacqua and those guys. I came in late 85 as a bartender.
One last guy who, he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar, and I showed up for work one night, and Peter met me at the end of the Horseshoe Bar, and he had the security key ring. He just walked up to me and said, "Bib, you're the floor manager now." Okay. Okay. And he walked away, and suddenly I was that scared kid from Stoneham again. It's like, wait a minute. This isn't what I signed up for.
Now, as soon as he put the keys in your
hand. I had been there long enough where eventually I became comfortable. And I was there for, probably the better part of a year, maybe a year and a half. Dates are kind of hazy at this point.
Sure, yeah, it's a long time ago.
So, but you came in with groups before. That was the thing, and you still worked with a few groups, right?
I got out of that. Long time ago when I decided to turn my life around, and I just needed to get out of that whole environment.
You got out of the whole music
for
thing?
For reasons I'm sure some folks can understand.
Sure, sure. What did you do?
I had, excuse me, for a while I was, started driving a truck, and then I got pulled inside. I became the regional warehouse supervisor for a large HVAC wholesaler.
Uh-huh.
And went back to school, became a network controller doing network management. And eventually from there, I became a systems analyst for a bunch of years until the dot-com bubble burst. And I was working for myself doing consulting for a while, and then I got injured, and it just became too much to try and juggle. So I've been mostly retired for the past 10 or 11 years.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Good. Yeah. So you turned it around after that. You did.
I'm sorry.
Was it? It was. It was good memories, I hope, from the channel from the time you were there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was great.
Yeah. And we're trying to bring a bit of that, Dinky and I, to it, because, you know, there's been a lot said about the negative stuff about the club, but particularly those years you were there, 85 to 87, were like the boom years. That's when Dinky came in and the place was really lively. And we've been talking about the mix of shows and the variety and how the place felt different every night because it was a different audience and a different headliner. And I'm trying to, you know, keep a positive spin on the community of it and everything else, because it really was a good time.
But what was your favourite show out of that? I know there was a lot, but what was the favourite one? Any stories?
Off the top of my head, I think. I'm sorry?
Any stories from that really hit you and keep your head going, oh, wow, I remember that one really well.
I think the first one that comes to mind was The Residence in, I think it was 86.
Right.
Because I had been familiar with them since I was maybe 10 or 11 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I had become a fan in the, I don't know, mid to late 70s. And then I saw them on the schedule and I thought, oh my God, The Residents are playing. You know, to me, that was bigger than if Led Zeppelin had shown up there.
And, understandably. I understand that.
Yeah, I remember when, I got there early to, you know, just be available if anybody needed help loading in. And,
yeah.
You know, van pulled up, some guys got out and they pumped their own gear up onto the stage and they were setting it all up. And at some point, one of the guys came over and he saw my staff shirt and asked, you know, is there anybody in here that isn't absolutely necessary? And I looked around and I think there were a couple of like boyfriends or girlfriends hanging around. I said, yeah, there's a couple. He said, could you just get them out for a little while? The band's going to do a sound check. And for obvious reasons, we don't want anyone else in here who doesn't need to be. So I corralled them into the back hallway. I said, you know, just give us about 20 minutes. And then these guys that were humping the gear started playing. It's like, oh my God, I'm watching The Residents without the eyeballs on. And
right.
I just stood there right in the middle of the pit with my mouth hanging open. And afterwards, the singing resident came over and thanked me. And he said, you know, everything's fine. And as I let the people out of the back hallway, Snake Finger, who was touring with them as their guitar player, walked up and asked me if there was any place he could get a cup of tea. So I brought him over to the concession stand where Cheyenne, the waitress's daughter, Woody's daughter, was working.
Yeah.
And I asked her, and she made him a cup of tea, and the three of us were standing talking, and I remember he asked her, you know, so what did you think of it, of our music? And she very sheepishly said, I thought you were really good, but you scared me. Your music's really scary, which he thought was hilarious. And he said, don't worry, we're not scary. It's just our music and we're having fun. And I thought it was really sweet the way he, you know, assuaged her fears, because I think she was 13 or 14
right.
at the time.
Yeah, she was young.
And, and you know, I had been a huge fan of his, you know, for a number of years. And I just thought it was really great the way he handled the whole thing and that I got to talk to him. And then he went off and they played their set. And I think I ignored the entire club. And I remember standing backstage on stage right, just watching the whole thing with my eyes and my mouth hanging open. Wow. This is amazing.
Yeah,
then I got to chat with them a little bit afterwards, and you know, it was really great.
Yeah, they were a great show. I was not familiar with them when they came in, so I found them in there, and they came back a couple of times. They played. I think two.
I don't remember them coming back to the channel.
Yeah,
I've seen them
back one more time.
I think just about all their tours.
They only do the one show.
I think that's what I think. Yeah.
I know. I still have a T-shirt.
It was 86, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was January of 86.
Yeah, I still have the black eyeball T-shirt from the show. I kept it.
The black eyeball.
I kept it. Because I remember being really impressed with them. I didn't know you were a fan. I did run into Woody's daughter about, geez, I want to say 5 years ago, 6 years ago at the Melody Tent. She was at a show with a band and working in the business, Cheyenne.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All grown up.
All grown up, I'm sure.
I ran into Woody, probably about 10, 15 years ago at a, it was the first or the second annual rock and soul Christmas thing at the Regent Theater.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She happened to be there, and it was nice to connect with her for a while, but then she just dropped out of sight again, and I lost touch.
Yeah, I haven't heard from her.
But she said Cheyenne was doing well.
Yeah, I hadn't heard from her. I did hear from Andrew a couple of times,
yeah.
From Andrew Arsenal, over the years.
And I think he's still doing that religious stuff up there in New Hampshire.
He's still doing some production work around, He does some work, yeah. He's around.
Isn't that handy?
Yeah. There's a lot of them still in it, there's a lot of the guys. Do you stay in touch with anybody who was in the in that circle that you were there in, or besides Sandy?
Actually, some of my closest friends are people I met there.
Uh-huh.
There was Patty, who worked in the concession stand.
Yeah.
She
and I have been tight for almost 40 years now.
Wow.
After we were both gone from the club, we ended up splitting a house in Brookline for a few years. Sandy, the bartender who insulted me and convinced me to start working there. Kim, one of the waitresses, I'm still in touch with. Adam and Lisa Cariolo.
Yeah, I follow them on Facebook, so I see them.
Yeah.
And Lisa's done great.
And you were in touch with Debbie before she passed away,
yeah.
Right? Oh, yes. Yeah, that was...
Yeah, it was sad.
I was going, yes, that was really sad. We planned
really
to
was.
Get together, and then... Yeah, well, plans changed.
As you know, that stuff is terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very... that was a tough one. I'd been in touch with, I guess, her significant other just last year at the tent. He came to do some work, and we were talking. So right before, did you stay around the music for a little while after you got out?
The reason I had left the club, I got a chance to go out and do a national tour with the Replacements.
Oh, okay,
that's right.
That's right.
I knew that it was somebody you went with.
How was that?
I came back briefly when that tour was finished, but I don't know if it was me that had changed or just the, enough people had changed or it didn't feel the same.
That's what happened.
That was around the time when I decided, no, I need to step back from all of this and reprioritize things.
How was the Replacements tour? Because I remember that show at the tent, or at the channel.
At the channel, yeah.
That was fun. The first night that I had met up with them, I think it was in Detroit, after soundcheck, I went to it was a ballroom upstairs, and I think it was St. Andrew's Hall, just to meet with everybody and hang out for a bit. And I sat down with Paul Westerberg, and he said, so, what brings you to our doorstep? And I told him, I was working at the channel in Boston. He goes, oh, God, the channel. Yeah, the last time we played there, that English guy sat us down and yelled at us.
Yeah, because that was the night you poured a beer.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. You guys look like a bunch of scared school children as he was laying the law down on you.
Right, that was the night he dumped a beer in Dinky's monitors.
Yeah.
That's what happened. That's why they were getting lectured. I remember it.
They get the lecture and then a bill.
Yeah. And I think, I think it was the night after that he fell off the stage at the Ritz.
That's what
he did. In New York, Westerberg did.
Did his ankle in?
Yeah, he did his ankle in or his leg in or something, but it was right the day after, or 2 days after or something. But
didn't do too much to straighten it out. Cause I remember when we played the Beacon Theater in New York, he took a header off the stage into the crowd and with his guitar, and I had to jump off the stage and try and pick him up and throw him onto the stage.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous, but it was just another night with them. It was a lot of fun.
That night at the channel was great. That was Barron's Whitfield open for him. I remember that.
Yeah.
And he was always fun. Barron. He still is. He's still performing.
I remember they brought him back
home. He's got a jazz gig going now at Off Cabot. It's coming up, I think, this weekend or next weekend.
Well, he mainly performs in Germany and places like that in the summer because that's where he makes his money and because they love him over there.
Yeah, he's been on the festival circuit.
Yep. Festival circuit.
Yep.
And that's where he makes his money, and he comes back and does these occasional things like he's doing this jazz one and stuff. Because he is wild when he gets going, and you put him in a band with Sal Baglio and all that crowd, then you've got something going off because they all love the guy because he's such a performer, you know.
How could you not love him?
Oh, no. No, he's always. I remember.
I mean, he's a great guy, and he leaves it all on the stage. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he does, and that's a good point. He really does.
I remember that night at the Regent when I ran into Woody. He and Sal were playing together, and that was another night. I just stood there with my mouth open, why aren't these guys huge?
It's like when all the old guys get together and girls and whatever, you know, from them days, and they're coming up to now. They just let it go out. I think they're back in the '80s, you know. It's like and having a great old time because they got their friends around them to play and sing and do all that stuff. That's why you'll see Sal doing things with John Butcher and Tommy. And
he plays with Tom Hembridge a lot.
Tom Hembridge a bit too, you know, all that crowd. And Tom's really excelled out of that place. So, you know, got big kudos for Tom. What he's done with the blues and what he's done with we've got Buddy Guy who came through. And he played for all that stuff, you know.
And Bonamassa and Kingfish and all this new blues stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Kingfish.
He's got Kingfish now. Yeah,
that was it. So what new music nights did you like?
Jazz and hell.
I remember them.
Those were always tough.
Nobody beat the hell. They were fantastic.
The hell?
Jazz and hell.
Jazz and hell, yeah.
They were great.
I know.
It's like Nepage.
I got in touch with
Nepage. I remember them.
Japan backwards.
I think the singer's name was Eric. And I got in touch with him on MySpace, and I was telling him, why don't you get the hell back together and get in touch with Carmelita because she does Bay State Rock every Sunday night.
Right.
And he thought it was great. You know, in all the years I was together with them, nobody ever called us the hell. That's great. and they still get back together and do some shows here and there.
That's
unfortunately
cool.
Not around here because I would definitely go see them again.
I don't know the Magic Room. Wes Desmond gets all that lot, all them kind of guys that play up there, you know, with all his friends with the Bent Men and all that kind of funny stuff.
Where's that?
That's in Norwood. That's in
That new room in Norwood.
Well, it's Des's room since they don't have the rehearsal place anymore. They've got this performance place that people love because it's just funky, and you know it's an old warehouse right next to David Beaver's archives, and they've done a nice job.
Albert Lee's going to be up there in May.
Albert is?
Albert's doing a one-off, isn't he?
That's the fun stuff. Yeah. I mean, you know, and you get all that crowd that really like to perform, and especially who want to get back together, like you're talking of Jazz in Hell, people like that. And they're performing up there. They've got an outlet through Desmond, you know, through Des Desmond there, you know.
Right.
But a lot of the channel stuff, though, a lot of those people now have either retired completely, like you said, or they're just having fun with the majors, you know, like, you know, the Fools are still at it, you know. It's fun to see them, but they've never changed. and that's the beauty of it. Except the only way that they change is like Mike Gerard doing his big band thing, you know, and whatever.
I just wish that they'd do something closer to Boston instead of up at Salisbury all the time.
Yeah, well, that's what happened. There's no facility down in Boston other than these new modern places.
And a lot of the new rooms are opening out, you know, in these other places.
Yeah, there's definitely all these opening rooms. I don't know about this damn. There's good rooms and there's bad rooms. Let's put it that way. But nothing's going to beat a good old theatre like the old Regent and stuff like that. You get them in there and everybody's enjoying themselves, but you can't really dance after you get up and get into trouble, you know.
Well, there's so many of those suburban rooms. You know, there's a new room in Gloucester. Are you on the North Shore, Ted? There's a brand new room up in Gloucester.
Yeah, you up there?
He's still with us?
You're still in Stoneham, right?
Oh, I lost him. There he is. Sorry, there? Ted.
Are you there, Ted?
Hold on, we've got to get him back on the... come on, I don't need... Somebody's trying to call me, is what's going on.
It might be him.
No, somebody else was calling me, and it didn't. I know she's calling for tickets for the Melody Tent. Give me a second. Let's get Ted back.
Are you there, Ted? We missed you. The phone went down. Yeah, there you are. You're ringing.
Hello?
Sorry, Ted.
There we are.
Somebody called me in and I lost you there for a second.
Yeah, you were talking... modern technology.
Yeah, you were talking about the other rooms. That's what's happening is... these small rooms in the suburbs, I think people aren't going into Boston as much, so the bands are coming to them, you know?
Even down here, the Spire in Plymouth, you know, you get them all passing through and what have you. But there's some, you know, it's just what it is. I mean, people don't really want to be out too late anymore, you know what I see? But the older crowd doesn't. They want to be home by 9 o'clock.
And Dinky and I have talked about it this last few weeks about, you know, the scene that was the channel. You know, it was how people would go to the club for the club. It didn't matter who was playing. There was a certain element that just hung out at the channel because that's where they found their music. And it was a lot more sociable. And it tends now to be people just going out and buying tickets to see specific bands, you know.
They don't socialise like they used to. So it's they're in, they're out. They don't even want to talk to people. That's
all changed a lot. Yeah.
And back then, it seemed like the reason for going out was to just run into people you know so you could hang out, have a beer or two with them and check out whoever happened to be playing.
Exactly. It was a much more experimental deal.
Depending on... you know, where you worked or your social circle, chances are you knew a couple of the bands that were playing so you could hang out with them after their sets as well.
Well, that's true, especially your crowd, who always, but that's what you did. I mean, even when you were doing security, you did help people load in and load out and that kind of stuff. Yeah. And chat with the band.
I mean, the extra $50 didn't hurt either.
No, absolutely.
I mean, and they were good at that, a lot of them bands, because they wanted to keep their own crews around, you know.
Yeah. Did you get out and about in the other clubs, Ted? Did you circulate in Boston?
I'm sorry?
Did you get out and about around the other clubs and circulate in Boston when you were with the band? So you were pretty much on the scene all the time?
Yeah, I mean, on the rare nights that I had off, you know, I either hit the Rat, Bun Ratties, Green Street.
Oh yeah, another one. Yeah,
I think there was the metal club in Kenmore, Narcissus. I think
Narcissus. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, I had a couple of friends that work there, so sometimes I just pop in and hang out there for a little while.
Yeah, see what's going on.
Yeah.
It was the scene. The scene was happening, and they were, you know, because the club was open till 2 o'clock in the morning. People would be able to see a few people at the other clubs and come back and see what's going on at the channel, because they didn't go on until after midnight.
Right. Headliners wouldn't
go. There was always some place to go back then.
Always. Even afterwards, you know, Chinatown. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Chinatown and having some iced tea and stuff like that.
Yeah. And the crowd, you know, it was the same crowd moving around. You kind of knew people all over town. It was always good. It was a good scene. It's too bad it's gone.
So, other than Jazz in Hell, any other locals that you really got off on?
One of my favorite bands to see on the upcoming schedule is November Group. I thought the music was fantastic and the crowds were great because they just, you know, it was a quieter crowd. They just wanted to come out, listen to some music, have a couple of drinks, dance, and then they left. It was almost like having a night off. I used to love listening to them.
No drunken louts and stuff. It was a night off.
I'm sure the bartenders probably didn't like seeing those shows, but, you know, doing security, let's have more of those, please.
Easy nights.
So what was the worst one that you had that you thought of?
I think one of the rougher ones would have been Run DMC. Seemed like, you know, or SOS band. Those were the nights where if you had a staff shirt on, you had a bullseye on you, and you'd just get sucker punched for no reason.
Really?
And, yeah. But some nights were good, some nights were different.
Yeah, it was pretty hairy. We were talking about, I used to be fascinated by the change from Sunday afternoon when we do all ages hardcore and then do a reggae show at night, you know?
Stuff like that.
And we'd turn the club into two different clubs, essentially, in a day.
And that was so much fun because it was so different at morning and night versus afternoon.
Yeah, we had some big ones. It was a lot of fun.
Well, I remember I used to get on the Sunday afternoon matinees. I used to have you, Tony, and Peter, on my back about kids stage diving and everything. Yeah. And, you know, because I was in my early 20s at the time, I couldn't see a problem with it. And I was like, you just got to let them dance. You got to let them have fun. And, you know, but now at 60, it's like, oh, God, if one of those kids had landed wrong, none of us would have had jobs.
I was there one week and scraped a kid up, I think, off the floor. And kid had hitchhiked in from, this was when I was back there in 91, and a kid dived, and he'd come in from New Hampshire somewhere. I had to track his family down. Took a header and jumped off, and nobody caught him. Just head first.
Which show was that?
It was in 1991. It was when I was back there. I can't even remember what show it was, but it was when we were into that hardcore stuff in the afternoons.
Hardcore was just outrageous. After we'd taken down the false ceiling and stuff, and they saw all the metal that could swing on the bars and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And especially towards the end of the club, you know, because it seemed to get more and more crazier as those bands came in and given more stick, you know, that kind of thing. And you'd gone by then. You know, actually, you were on the road with Replacements by then, I think, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It got to be more about the show in the pit than the show on stage, you know?
We watched from the sound booth all these people going crazy.
I remember Gary Sharon from Extreme got stuck up in the rafters because he had climbed up to swing, and suddenly he just couldn't get down, so a couple of the bouncers had to go out and help him down.
That's the stories that we like, fun stuff. With good artists, because, I mean, the guy can sing. There's no two ways about it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, that was very cool.
Sometimes things just go a little sideways.
All good stuff.
Especially the back door. You didn't know whether you were going out into the canal or what, you know?
Yeah. It depended what you had done to warrant going through those doors.
Oh. Well, yeah.
And which way you went through, and whether you went through head first or from feet first, right?
Well, that's why the back doors were popular. Side door was dangerous.
Yep.
Side doors were so dangerous. If you hit it too much, you're in the canal there. You're in there.
Yeah, it was. That water was cold and deep.
Oh yeah.
Do you ever do you ever hear about any of the other guys that were on the bouncers there? Ted, Tony, it comes to mind, the wrestler, the dungeon master.
I remember. I had stayed in touch with Tony for a while, and then we lost touch, and I had heard that he had passed away.
He was a character.
Not really any of the other bouncers. For whatever reason, you know, we just seemed to lose touch. The folks that I'm still in touch with were either, they seem to be bartenders, servers, or concession stand people. Good. And you know, you guys.
Great. Well, it's really good of you to get on with us. We'll get this one up. We're gonna try to launch these podcasts in the next 3 or 4 weeks, and we're revamping the website. We're gonna try to make it more searchable and database it.
But Ted told me yesterday that the older website was more searchable for the show.
The last one.
You could type in the band name, and it would just spit out all the dates that they were there.
That's what we're looking for again. So let me check the code on it, because I didn't know that.
She may be able to.
I might just be able to reverse it.
That's probably what happened.
It got lost when we switched it from
over different people
from service. Because do you use the site a lot, Ted?
I'm sorry.
Have you used the site very often?
Oh yeah, yeah. Because I over the course of conversations with people, I'll say, oh yeah, I think I remember when they played the club, and then I'll quickly pull up the website and just start searching through by year.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, I can usually find it pretty quickly.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
But I still do miss being able to just type in a band name and getting all the dates spit right back at me.
Great.
I've long since forgotten how to do all that stuff, but I know, it's just a simple search query.
Right. And I didn't know. I helped Dinky when we first put it up with some people down here, and then we transferred it, and I think it probably got lost in the shuffle.
There's been two to three other people that sort of right. this over the years, and now we've got one lady who does this down in Plymouth here.
Yeah, we'll probably find the original code.
Her dad was one of the major truck drivers, and he just retired. He just went out again for his friend on the Billy Joel tour. But he's one of the old original drivers out of Terry Hanley and them days,
Way back, yeah.
It's good. She's been on the road with him, so she knows what it's all about and stuff,
Well, if you think of more people, Ted, I did get Sandy's number from Dinky.
Yeah, and we're going to talk to
her. We're going to give her a call, try to get her on with us next week and get some more of these. By the time we're done, we should have about 8 to 10 podcasts ready to launch.
That's what we're trying to do.
So that's the plan.
It's good stuff, like this.
Have either of you reached out to Adam or Lisa Cariolo?
I have not, but I have them on my list. I have Adam down there. I think Adam's up in Maine, right? I think he just bought
them. They're both on Facebook. Roseanne's on Facebook. I've stayed in touch with her as well.
Oh, yeah. Good.
I'm sure for the rest of the day, other names are going to keep popping into my head. It's like, oh, I forgot to mention them.
Well, that's great. No, if you can think of them, we'll get you back on. We'll get a general chat going. But, right now we're just trying to see how much focus there is and how much interest there is. I think there'll be quite a bit out there. I think people are still up for this,
Yeah, I definitely think there are.
I think the negative stuff that did happen at the end kind of overshadowed the good years, and you were certainly there in the good years.
Yeah, definitely.
That's what we're trying to talk about, and the diversity of the place as well. All the world beat music that came through there,
exactly.
And all the different new acts that the place broke. Not just the local scene, but it was a real stopping point for national acts trying to get into Boston.
Yeah, definitely.
One of the bands. I think they started out as a new music band with the Mighty Mighty Bosstones.
Absolutely,
And I mean, they were terrible the first time they played, and they got feedback from people, and so they went and they learned to do what they're doing.
That's right. They just
came back and they kept getting better and bigger and bigger.
Sean McNally worked close with them back then.
Yeah.
And we'd started trying to do a ska night, and that's where they kind of came through that with Bim Skella Bim and all those ska bands that were just starting up at the time. And that
was some good ones.
Well, some good stuff came through there. Yeah. Well, you brought up two great names in your conversation that I don't think we've mentioned before. Definitely not the Residents.
Oh, no, we haven't.
And that was a legendary band. Show in there, and a legendary band.
Yeah.
And the Replacements, of course, are still
legendary.
Well known. Famous. Yeah. It's great, Ted. So thanks a lot.
Definitely.
I really appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you.
Let's do it again. We'll talk some more. And if you spread the word, let's maybe the next time there's a reunion, we'll have a real one,
We'll get everybody together and have a show here and there,
That'd be great.
And if not that, just get a bunch of folks together and hang out for an evening.
It'd be good. Exactly. It'd be great. It'd be great. Maybe we'll do it at Norwood at that place. Maybe we'll put a band in there and do something there.
Yeah, we'll do some that we wears up there. Cause
that'd be good.
They're pretty cool, and they do some real far-out stuff, so that's
a good idea.
That's what I like.
We'll get
We thank you, Ted, and thank you for being on Two Pints in the Corner.
Yeah.
And We're actually 1, 2, 3 pints right now, maybe 4. But 2 pints we're going to have.
Right.
It's a bit early for pints, but we'll get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah. You lose count after a while.
Yeah, that's right. Cheers, Ted.
Wouldn't
cheers.
Be the first time. Take care.
Thank you, Ted.
Talk to you later.
Cheers, mate.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Cheers.